Welcome back to the Roundtable. The amount that the American killing of Iraq's Qasem Soleimani on January 3rd will escalate confrontation between the two countries remains to be seen. For History and Perspective, WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes spoke with Assistant Professor of Political Science at Williams College, Galen Jackson.
So we're talking, of course, about the airstrike in Iran. I want to start with the man at the center of this conversation who was killed in the strike. What is his name? Who is he? And what does he represent domestically and internationally?
Yeah, so the man's name was Qasem Soleimani, and he was sort of a unique figure within Iran's national security establishment. He was in charge of what's called the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC's elite Quds Force, which is sort of a unique group. It's basically Iran's version of its special forces, but it's also in charge of military intelligence. So it conducts largely asymmetric operations throughout the Middle East. It's especially active in places like Lebanon, where Iran, of course, has deep ties to Hezbollah, in places like Yemen, where it supports the Houthi rebels. It played a very important role in supporting the Assad regime in the Syrian war, and especially in neighboring Iraq, where it has very close ties with a whole host of Shia militia groups. So Soleimani was enormously influential within Iran's national security apparatus. You've sort of heard different comparisons thrown around recently, but it'd be sort of like if the U.S. chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the CIA director were killed. He really sort of first distinguished himself within Iran, fighting in the Iran-Iraq War, which was really a seminal event in the history of the Islamic Republic. He carried out special operations behind Iraqi lines during that war, so that's sort of the origins of his rise. He's also known to be very close to the supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. So for that reason, he was also a high-level target. And since he was promoted to head of the Quds Force in the late 90s, he's sort of been everywhere for Iran. So he's been heavily involved in training and equipping Hezbollah. He played a major role in the fight against ISIS and supporting Assad in Syria. And perhaps most importantly, he was the guy running the show in Iraq, where Iran now has enormous influence with a number of Shia militia groups. And some of your listeners might know the New York Times published a few months ago a trove of documents just showing how much influence Iran now enjoys in that country. And Soleimani was really instrumental in achieving that. One thing important to note there was because of the role he played in Iraq, Soleimani was really behind many of the killings of American servicemen who were serving in Iraq. And in fact, this latest escalation sort of originated as a response to an attack from an Iranian-backed Shia group that killed an American contractor in Iraq. So he's by no means adored by all Iranians, and he's viewed as sort of a hardliner, but he was generally seen as sort of being above politics and viewed as a protector of Iran, a war hero in some ways, and also popular because he was sort of seen as standing up to countries like the United States and the Middle East. So you saw at his funeral in Iran, just enormous crowds out to support him. So it's pretty impressive how Iranians have closed ranks around this targeted killing.
The most immediate response from Iran to that action was the shelling of a pair of Iraqi air bases in Iraq that have American personnel at them. Can you tell me a little bit about that gesture and how Iran has framed that action?
Yeah. So this, of course, happened just last night. Iran fired somewhere in the range of 1 to 2 dozen missiles against U.S. bases in Iraq. To my knowledge, we haven't seen any casualties reported just yet. Now, it's possible that won't be the last action that Iran takes, and we've sort of seen conflicting reports as this situation continues to develop. But it seems like there are some indications that the Iranian leadership is not interested in escalating matters further. So Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, said that Iran is not looking for an escalation. The New York Times reported that some IRGC sources have said similar things. We also know that the supreme leader told his national security team that he wanted a proportional response. What that means isn't entirely clear, but it would suggest he's also not interested in escalating things further. But if Iran were to take additional steps, it does have a whole suite of options whereby it could retaliate further against the United States.
So as far as the selection of Soleimani as a target for the Trump administration, what do you think led to him being chosen, and how dramatic a choice was that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we still don't know the full story here, but we know a good bit at this point. In terms of why he was specifically targeted, we know that there were quite a few U.S. officials over the past decade that have advocated for killing Soleimani. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo reportedly was very much in favor of the strike. In terms of why he was specifically targeted, he was, again, responsible for killing a number of American service military personnel in Iraq over the last few years, so I'm sure that factored in. He was seen as a major asset to Iran, so he does he's sort of has big shoes to fill, so I'm sure that was taken into account. But more fundamentally, it's not totally clear that President Trump recognized just what a serious escalation this would be. Most of the reports I've looked at suggest that U.S. officials were quite surprised that he chose this option. And as the story, as I've sort of seen it reported, is Trump first wanted to retaliate for the death of an American contractor in late December who was killed by a Shia group in Iraq backed by Iran known as Kataib Hezbollah. And even more importantly, for the storming of the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, which also was carried out mainly by Iranian-backed Iraqi militias. And this sort of raised in the president's mind the specter of the 1979 embassy takeover in Tehran. I also saw some reports he had the 2012 attack on the American embassy in Benghazi on his mind. So he wanted to retaliate and evidently thought going after Soleimani was the way to do that. But whether he fully understood the ramifications of that target selection is unclear to me. And the other element here we still don't know much about, and maybe we'll learn more today because the administration is scheduled to be briefing lawmakers about this. But the administration has claimed that this was in sort of a preemptive strike, that there was intelligence indicating that Soleimani was getting ready to order attacks on American targets. We haven't seen what that intelligence was. There's been a lot of criticism that the administration has been sort of vague in this area. But those were the basic considerations, I think, that played into the decision to go after Soleimani.
As far as a regional impact, what does taking out Soleimani mean for the countries in the Middle East and beyond?
Yeah, so that's also a very good question. There's sort of two issues here. One is within Iran, what the political situation is now. And the effects there are sort of predictable. You know, imagine again that the CIA director were assassinated by a foreign country. Americans would probably be furious. So whereas prior to the strike, we saw significant protests against the regime due to the deteriorating economic conditions in Iran, we've really seen a rally around the flag effect in recent days, which is quite impressive for a country that's as politically divided as Iran is. Whether that will continue is sort of hard to say. Now, in terms of the regional potential implications, anyone that studies the Middle East knows that it's a very complex region, but I'll highlight three possible things to keep an eye on here. The first is what might happen in Iraq. So the Iraqi parliament recently voted to remove American forces from that country. For obvious reasons, since the strike against Soleimani was targeted at Baghdad International Airport, most Iraqis viewed this as a major violation of their sovereignty. But that vote set no timeline for the withdrawal of U.S. forces. There are a number of groups in Iraq, particularly the Sunnis and Kurds, that probably have some serious reservations about a precipitous U.S. pullout. There are a number of Iraqis that are not too happy about the depth of Iran's influence in that country, but it's possible that if the United States has to withdraw its forces from that country, that Iran might sort of gain the upper hand even more there. And secondly, what happens in Iraq in turn could have a real impact on the war against ISIS. So some U.S. forces, of course, have been waging that war from bases in Iraq. So if American forces have to leave that country, that would, of course, have a potentially significant impact on that conflict. And I think the million-dollar question is the whole issue of whether this leads to a broader escalation between the United States and Iran. I'm actually rather skeptical we'll see that sort of conflict, at least in the near future, because I don't think either side wants a war. And again, there are indications now that maybe both would like to de-escalate matters. I don't think Trump wants a war. Obviously, this was a major issue for him during the last campaign, ending endless wars in the Middle East. And obviously, we're now in an election year, so I don't think he wants that. He, of course, backed away last summer from retaliating against Iran, so I think he has some real reservations about this. There's not much appetite among the American people for another major war in the Middle East. Iran is a much larger country than Iraq, so it would be an even bigger war than the Iraq war was. So for that reason, I don't think the Americans want a major escalation. And for obvious reasons, I don't think Iran wants a major one either. I don't think it wants a war with the United States. So my money would be on it trying to walk things back now that it's carried out this missile strike. But that doesn't mean the odds are zero. There's still the possibility that a cycle of escalation continues. Trump, for example, has issued threats saying he's got 52 targets in Iran picked out, one for every hostage that was taken in 1979. He sort of walked those threats back, but nevertheless, the possibility remains. And the other key issue here that I want to raise has to do with Iran's taking further steps back from the 2015 nuclear agreement, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. So Iran announced in the aftermath of Soleimani's killing that it would no longer abide by that agreement's limitations on its ability to enrich uranium. And this, once again, puts the nuclear issue front and center in this whole debate. When Trump chose to withdraw from the JCPOA in May 2018 and then reimposed U.S. sanctions, this really returned to the fore here. And now that we've seen tensions ratcheted back up, we're sort of back to where we were in the pre-2015 period, when the question was whether there would be some sort of diplomatic settlement, if there was going to be military action, or whether there would be a nuclear Iran. The diplomatic settlement doesn't seem likely at this point. I suppose it's possible if a Democrat wins in 2020, Iran might be willing to explore another deal. But that seems like a pretty risky option for Tehran at this point. Washington obviously does not think well of the idea of a nuclear Iran. And so once again, the question of using major military force is back on the table, which could lead to a wider war. So those are some of the potential repercussions here. Again, there's a lot up in the air, but certainly the Middle East is very much on edge at the moment.
Turning to Iraq for a minute, what is the current state of American relationships with Iraq on the ground there? I know there was a vote relatively recently to remove foreign forces from the country. Does that pertain to American forces as well?
The vote that I saw, and I'd have to double check on this, was referring specifically to American forces, and the vote was taken unanimously. There's also been some conflicting reports from the Pentagon. There was a letter, an unsigned draft letter indicating that the United States would withdraw, but the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, said that that was not the policy. But I think that's sort of up in the air right now. The vote that the parliament took, again, had no deadline. Iraq, again, has certain reservations about Iran's influence within its country, so I don't think we're quite sure about what's going to happen there.
There's been some talk in the media of framing Soleimani as, you know, the world's number one bad guy or a terrorist or, you know, some somewhat bellicose language to frame his identity on the global stage. I'm interested, what are your reflections on that effort? Is there any accuracy to that?
I'm not so much of an expert on what other people internationally tend to think about it. I can tell you that certainly the U.S. military takes that sort of view. So I think that David Petraeus, the former CIA director, and before that, the leading commander in Iraq, at one point referred to Soleimani as evil. And he certainly was a bad guy. Again, responsible for a number of terrorist attacks throughout the region. So certainly in the United States, he's viewed that way. I'm not totally sure on how the rest of the world views him. But again, within Iran, sort of viewed as a national hero.
Williams College Assistant Professor of Political Science Galen Jackson speaking with WAMC's Berkshire Bureau Chief Josh Landes. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.